So, hey, John.
Hey, Alex.
Tuskis quod odi.
What's that?
Odi idiom de signo significantor linguam alienum. Sicut intellectus. Gravissime sic sius muta. Miror ego hoc praecedebat. Letterman terminium quiosco perfectisse.
At least 3 minutes.
Yes. We watched Ad Astra.
That's nice. Now think about your dad. What's your dad like? I want to meet that dad. Do-do-do-do.
here's your translation for you. Hi, John. Do you know what I hate? I hate the idea of foreign language as a signifier of intellect. Seriously, it's so dumb. I wonder how long I can keep this going before the Letterman effect sets in. And apparently it's that many sentences.
That's it.
So we watched Ad Astra, starring our friend Brad Pitt. And when I say our friend Brad Pitt, have we seen a Brad Pitt movie?
I was thinking about that. I don't know that we have.
Yeah, if somebody at home remembers.
Oh, no, we watched Inglourious Bastards.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We did.
But I think that might be it.
Yeah.
And that was more of an ensemble.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that this wasn't our first one, because I'm just going to start off just swinging hard.
Uh-huh.
He's very miscast.
I disagree to,
really?
to a degree. I think he does a great job in this role for playing a dude that's so bound up and constrained. Mm. I think he does a lot of letting a lot of emotion play while still doing that. But I think there's a lot of miscasting in this movie, kind of in general, in terms of like ages of people.
Let's take the Pitt for a second, because I don't think he did a bad job in it. I just don't think he's nothing about Pitt and his acting style just did it for me. And you're right. There's a lot of good acting going on. He did the best job he could, but I just kind of wish if this is him acting at 97%, I just wish it was a movie that kind of works a little bit better with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just never struck me as, is going to sound mean, but he doesn't come across as smart.
Mm.
And that actually really takes a lot of astronaut away. Like, I could see him being like, I don't know. It's just, there's something about Pitt that didn't do it, which sucks, because I actually really like him as an actor. Like, I think I think he's good in this. It just, I don't know who else they would have been, but somebody which is a little more, I'm not saying Ryan Gosling, but a little more Ryan Gosling to
them.
Well,
I mean, this is a very Gosling-y character.
Yeah.
Someone that's like comfortable in the silence.
Yeah.
Which he does very well. He really occupies that space. I've been rewatching or trying to watch the Nicholas Winding Refn series on Amazon, Too Old to Die Young, and Miles Teller, the actor, is basically playing a Ryan Gosling character.
Yeah.
And it's just, you can see you're not doing this right. You're the wrong person for this. You can't do what Ryan Gosling does. You're fine, but it's just like, so it's kind of that. I see what you're saying there, because you're also like Brad Pitt, known for being a more sort of charming guy. I think even in his more serious roles, there's something like, it's not this kind of character.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a stretch, but I happen to think he did a phenomenal job, but I see what you're saying.
So the movie opens with him being obsessed with being an astronaut, and his relationship with Liv Tyler is disintegrating in the background.
Because he only cares about the essentials.
Yes. So Liv Tyler, when she gets this script, does she not just have flashbacks of Armageddon or whatever the fuck that movie is? Because it's like the same shit. I mean, it's not the same shit, but in the background, you're like, oh, that's weird.
It's not, because she has dialogue in Armageddon. This she has the total, and it doesn't go as far as this, but that whole flashback girlfriend just looking angelic and standing there and looking off in the distance, sort of like Memento, or there's tons of movies like that where you think about your dead wife or something, and she's on the beach and she's smiling serenely at the sun or something like that.
Yeah, there's a bit of that in this.
Yeah.
It just kind of jumped out of me. And at no point in this movie does he bounce a graham cracker across her tummy.
Yeah, that's too bad. That was missing. That really would have tied the whole movie together emotionally.
I think so, because when I was watching this, I'm like, first I was kind of wowed by the color palette. I'm like, this looks great. I like how the weird breathing lights and this is a beautiful, beautiful film. But you know what's missing? It's graham crackers on a taut belly.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't even have to be her. Ruth Negga could just lay down at some point and just have
a
bit of an
animal cracker.
And it could be a future animal cracker. I'm not saying it's got to be the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's 21 something.
A capsule with animal cracker written on it.
Exactly. See, now you're picking up on
the future.
Now you understand what Ad Astra should have been.
Right. Which is kind of funny because this movie is let's talk about this Liv Tyler thing. Like, this movie really, like, you know how in a lot of sci-fi movies, you know, the like, or Star Trek or something, like, well, we have to like go along the edge of the black hole to get up enough speed to go do these things. This does that with melodrama, and it's like this almost leaning so far into like really super melodramatic, almost like Interstellar. And then kind of narrowly escape. Sometimes it dips a little bit further in than I would like, but it also, it's this weird thing, because it also kind of straddles line. There are parts where it feels like a John Carpenter movie almost. Like, if you took away all the stupid introspection, which is a weird thing to say, but if you took away that, like, where it's just like, he's the toughest guy and he's the only man allowed to go find his dad. Now he's going to go ride a dune buggy and shoot dudes and fight a monkey. Like, it's weird enough that it would be this like weird fun genre movie, and it kind of balances.
That's funny.
That.
I didn't even think about it that way. Yeah, totally. Like, yeah, if they turned into the skit a little bit in one direction, just have him be like give him like an eye patch.
Some of the action scenes feel a little tacked on, but like still work with the movie, but they just feel like, oh, well, we better do something here. There's been a lot of just droning and Brad Pitt narrating. Let's have some action happen.
Well, no, I mean, I couldn't disagree more. I mean, I think when you're watching this movie and you're like getting introduced to the world and how his father, he's got this separation from his father, and then it's literally his father is just as distant as he could possibly be. Mm-hmm. I think the natural next step is I'll have my compatriots being attacked by a monkey.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think just that's screenwriting 101. I mean, I think
I didn't read that book.
It's actually like chapter 3 of Save the Cat. See, first you save the cat, then you get attacked by a monkey in space.
Space chimp.
Yeah, because I wasn't expecting that. So we're kind of introduced to the MacGuffin of the picture, which is there's this space electricity problem.
Yes, the pulses.
I don't think I quite understood what that meant.
Me neither. It was a problem. That's all I knew.
Okay.
Because Brad Pitt talking about how as an astronaut, he has to check in occasionally, do these psych tests where he just says what he's feeling and how he's doing.
I like those bits.
It reminded me of almost like THX-1138.
Yes.
Where it's that picture of Jesus that you go into and just shout out, and then it gives you drugs.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, I would like a little robot to check in with me during the day.
Is that Tabernacle, or is that from a different movie?
Tabernacle's from Zardoz.
Oh, is that Zardoz? Yeah. Okay. It's called something. It's got a dumb name like that in THX. Yeah.
He's works on this giant space antenna to help us communicate with the outer reaches. And yeah, there's this pulse that hits it and causes electronic malfunctions and causes shit to blow up. Causing him to fall off the space antenna.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really well done scene.
Yeah. Them establishing how kind of calm under pressure or disassociated he is, whatever you want to like take it. His kind of calm face, and then just watching these people just get their asses handed to him, just bouncing off of the, you know, Titanic style, bouncing off the side of the space thing.
I just learned today about that reference because I've never seen Titanic.
Have you really never seen Titanic?
Never seen Titanic. Wow. But I saw that clip of the guy bouncing off the propeller.
Yeah. How the hell you're my age. How the hell did you avoid that summer without seeing it?
Being a misanthropic.
So you're saying you didn't have a girlfriend?
No, I did, but like we were both just like whatever, man.
Really?
Yeah.
I was going out with like the gothiest goth girl ever, and you better bet your ass that I had to take her to see fucking Titanic.
No, never happened.
Wow.
Yeah, never saw it.
I mean, you're not missing much. Watch it.
I just don't have an opinion about it one way or the other. I'm sure, you know, whatever.
Anyway, so yeah, I like that scene with the the other people kind of flying around and
yeah, and then he's as he's plummeting Earth, because he's just like in low orbit basically. And so he's able to get far enough, and that's part of his thing is that he's super cool under pressure. You find out later, like basically his pulse on any of these missions doesn't go above 80 or something. Like he's just Mr. Chillax, and he's able to get it together to launch his parachute. And despite, then the parachute gets hit by debris.
Oh, I forgot about that. That was a nice little sequence.
Yeah, but it's very impressive. And man, I wish I could have seen this movie on the big screen.
Yes.
Like, I'm really kicking myself that I missed it.
I didn't realize how nice this was going to look. Yeah. I don't know who photographed this, but like, it looks great.
The same dude who did Interstellar, actually.
That makes sense. Yeah, because it looks really fucking good.
Hoyt Van Hoytema.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Who directed this while you have this open?
James Gray. I've not seen his movies.
I'm familiar with his anatomy.
Yeah, we all are. We all saw the photos. Yeah. But like he recently made the Lost City of Zed. That was the one he made before Ad Astra that got some That's right. It's got the fucking Charlie Hunnam in it.
Oh, Lost City of Z. Yeah. The one. Brad Pitt was supposed to star in that. I read that book.
Yeah. We Own the Night, which I've heard of.
Let me ask you. So you're not one of those Ponzi people that says Zed. Is that what they called it eventually?
Did I say Zed?
Yeah.
Oh, because I just heard something where they've referred to it as
Okay,
Zed.
No, I would.
But like, if you're British.
No, yeah, totally.
But no, it should be the Lost City of Z.
But I don't know if that was written by a British person and like they literally called it like in the marketing or whatever.
No, Zed. That was just me like reading it and
no, gotcha.
My brain just
100%
so understand like an asshole.
Yeah, no, no. I parsed the dice towards you. I'm like, you don't seem the type that would do that. Yeah,
thank you.
You don't have that level of
confidence. Well, it's just or was it like John's too dumb to do that?
No, again, usually that is the reason for a lot of things I say on the show. It's like, yeah, that dumb shit probably doesn't even know what he's saying.
Not unfounded.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because of the dumb.
Right.
So we meet Donald Sutherland, and boy, do I love his old face.
Oh, my God.
I haven't seen him in a while. What a craggy, so beautiful man. Like,
yeah. He's sent to, I just saw the 1999 movie Virus. With Jamie Lee Curtis. It was a Dark Horse made movie. They dumped a bunch of money into
maybe
it.
Maybe I didn't see that. Maybe I just saw the commercial for it a bunch of times.
But he's in it, and he doesn't look that much older at first glance.
Yeah.
Like, but then when you spend a little bit of time, you're like, oh my God, Donald Sutherland is very old. Brad Pitt is hired by Spacecom to, he gets this classified information that these pulses, which have been fucking shit up all over the planet, might be coming from Neptune, which is where his father went.
Yeah, the Lima Project. It's
part of the Lima Project. And so he needs to go figure out what's going on there. Brad Pitt he's like, my father died out there a long time ago. But yeah, we'll go see what's going on out there. And they send Donald Sutherland to come with him.
Well, they even say that like they think his father might still be alive and hiding from them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like his father, that was like 16 years ago or whatever, and then his father was like 70 back then. It's like, why the fuck would you assume he's still alive?
Yeah.
And I think that goes to part of the age problem.
That's the thing. And it's like, I don't want to be like, well, I'm not sure about the science of this, and it would take too long to get to Neptune. Whatever. For the purposes of this movie, the technology is there that you can do this, and it's fine. But like, Donald Sutherland's fucking old.
Yeah,
and I'm like, you're going to put him in space? I'm not buying. And like, if they were more, if the ships were more Star Trek, Star Wars, and less like fancier versions of rockets we have now.
Yeah, yeah.
It might feel a little bit more natural, but this just felt like, he shouldn't be in space.
Yes, I agree with that. And weirdly, he doesn't go, which is odd that they even introduced the character.
That both him and Ruth Negga are unfortunately like just there to move things along, but kind of not really. Like they don't have to be there, but they are. This whole thing, by the way, and part of the reason for that, I think, is like this movie is very Heart of Darkness, Apocalypse Now, Heart of Darkness. Like it's which is I'm a sucker for any movie that's like that. That kind of like, I've got to go into the deepest, darkest, whatever to find a guy. Love that stuff.
Yeah.
So this movie already had me with that. But there does seem to be like these weird like vignettes almost of things as he's moving through there that some kind of advance the plot, but in ways that don't really warrant as much time that's spent with them.
Yeah, I agree. Donald Sutherland doesn't really need to be there. Or, I mean, it's fine. I like.
Yeah, I'll absolutely hang out with Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, in a non Hunger Games role, it's nice to see him. But Ruth Negga, it's just unfortunate because she's such a good actress.
Yeah.
Really like her. And she's doesn't have much to do.
No.
And she shows up for the role. But like, maybe it's because we know their names and faces that it jumps out how little they have.
Yeah.
But obviously it's an odd choice. And then the age-wise, like him being so old and then Tommy Lee Jones being so old. I mean, maybe just they've got some life-extending shit in the future.
I guess, but it was just a thing where, Tommy Lee Jones being that old makes more sense to me in that, like, he's been out there for a long time or something. But it's still, like, he probably even could have gone a little younger. Whatever, I like them both as actors, I'm happy to see him. The other thing that was this sort of an odd choice, and again, speaking of sort of the Apocalypse Now tie-in, the narration in this, the voiceover.
Yeah.
Uses a lot of voiceover from Brad Pitt, and some of it is really Blade Runner-y. Like, it's really, like, there are times where it's great, and because the whole thing is you're spending a lot of time with this guy and his internal monologue. But then there's stuff where it's like, it's telling you exactly what you're seeing on the screen when, he's like, I hate how corporate the moon has gotten. And you're like, yeah, I could see the, how corporate the moon has gotten. And I mean, like, that's, that might not be the best example, but I just feel like there's some stuff. Or like when he's like, they're using me. Yeah, we just learned that.
Here's the thing about it being Blade Runner-y is there's a generation of people, and I don't know how old this director is, but that came up on the Blade Runner cut with Harrison Ford's. Mm-hmm. As Harrison Ford put it, he did a bad job with the narration because he didn't believe it needed to be there. But people that grew up on thinking that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that's a kind of choice of, I need you to do this affectless narration that kind of over-explains stuff, much like the Blade Runner thing.
Yeah.
And like, that's kind of, they're choosing because they think that was the choice that was made during Blade Runner, not just, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. It just drove me nuts because it was either too much see and say, or it just like really just explained the themes, which got really old.
He gets explained, he gets his mission briefing or whatever. And he goes to the moon, and boy, do I love the moon in this.
I want to go to the moon so bad.
I want to go to the moon in this because it's like, it's, have you ever been to like a shitty small airport on like Hawaii or some like backwater place?
Yeah.
That's what the moon felt like here. Yeah. We're just like, you're right. Like you can see
I'm in the St. Louis airport.
Like you see these signs that are like kind of, they're not like, it's not like the neon's going out, but you just feel it's old. Mm-hmm. And oh God, I love it. It's like why the original Star Wars was good. It's the first sci-fi movie that went, no, space is going to be lived in. Not everything's going to do. And this is some lived in ass fucking
But it's still that kind of that gross that we took this amazing advancement in mankind and turned it into a theme park.
Yeah.
Futurama.
I was about to say,
I would like to go to that moon as well.
Yeah.
Listen to the Wailers on the Moon song. But they kind of do the little 2001 nod of like, oh yeah, here's what corporate space travel would look like, or commercial space travel, which is another credit I'll give this movie is that I feel like it does a good job of sort of recognizing its influences, but without like trying to ape them completely or like, hey, you remember this one? You know, it's like there's certain things that you can't get around. I feel like if you're trying to make this kind of movie, you're going to end up referencing or having something that people are going to go like, that's from 2001, that's from Solaris, that's from whatever.
Yeah.
And I think this absolutely acknowledges it, but it doesn't like Interstellar be like, hey, you remember the rotating space station? We got that, but it's fast.
Yeah, no, this one's a lot more subtle in it, which I enjoyed. On the moon, there's another just kind of beautiful shot. I think, God, this movie looks so good.
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Where they're driving the moon buggy out towards the, I don't know, they're going to land or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just kind of reaching up and like playing with the moon dust going by.
I want to go hang out on the moon.
This is every time, like sitting through this movie, I'm annoyed that this movie isn't more famous. Like it looks so fucking good. It's like people, even if it's not like a, like plot wise, not like the most, you know, kind of put together full film.
Yeah.
Just fucking hit mute and just kind of just watch what's happening.
Just vibe on it, bro.
Yeah, really.
I mean, I like the soundtrack a lot too. I mean, this movie is very much catnip to me because it is. So you have this, you know, the Heart of Darkness kind of thing. And then you have drony space stuff.
Yes.
Like hypnotic space. Love it. Love it. But they're heading to the location on the dark side of the moon. That's where they're going to take the rocket. Brad Pitt's going to meet up the rocket. It's going to take him to Mars, which is his final destination because we have a colony on Mars. And they're interrupted by some space pirates.
Yes.
And this is a scene that we were referencing earlier that almost feels like an attacked on action scene. But what I like about it is that there's a little reference, I think even when he's on the plane or on the ship heading up, about how like, yeah, there's not really like borders on the moon, but there's some like kind of established areas and there's some open territory that's under, you know, there's war going on basically. Yeah. And Brad Pitt gives a whole voiceover about war never changes. And, you know, here we are fighting for resources. Because they're attacked by these space pirates. You don't know anything about them. You don't know where they're from. You don't really know what they want because it's just a rover. Like it's not like a cargo ship or anything. But I like that they're just, no, this shit here is fucked up too because mankind sucks.
Yeah. And it's a nice fight sequence. It is tacked on, but it looks great.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this movie, and I'm going to try not to say it as much, but a lot of this movie gets such a pass because of how nice it looks.
Uh-huh.
Like if this wasn't as beautiful, I would be pointing out how dumb that scene is. It doesn't need to be there.
Well, I feel like so much of it is so expertly crafted in that way that, so these scenes kind of stick out, but I still think that gets done in a way that they're tamped down a bit. Like it doesn't feel like a complete sore thumb, but maybe just an owie one.
Yeah. He gets this secret kind of USB key. And he finds out that his dad has cut off all communication. That's like the kind of next major plot point.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads him to, I have it as a Norwegian ship that they're going to the moon, to Mars with. Who cares? It's that ship they got. And that's when the important question comes up. I'm going to read directly from my notes. Hey, John, when a space ape eventually eats my face, which at this point is inevitable, please make sure to float my body into the darkness of space, as is the right of all men.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You got it.
Yes. I laughed very hard where inexplicably a fucking orangutan starts eating people's faces.
Yeah. So it's that's the Norwegian ship.
Yes.
There. Yeah. So he gets on this.
Oh, that's why I wrote Norwegian ship. Okay. Yeah.
So he gets on this rocket with some people. And this was an example, again, if this isn't voiceover, but it was kind of tiring. Where
the monkey does the voiceover and there's 30 seconds of
over. I don't speak it.
Which is weird. Yeah. Why would he should just have Brad Pitt do it?
But no, when he enters the Cephas, which is the ship that's going to take him up to Mars, and he gets introduced to people, and they figure out that he's the son of Tommy Lee Jones's character, who's gone the furthest any man has gone into space, and he's a hero to Spacecom. They spend so much time, and they spend so much time just talking about it, and like, wow, this is what your dad did. He did this. Wow, that's impressive what your dad did, you know, because he did this. And it's just like, you've established this already, movie. Like, I'm not that stupid.
I don't disagree with you, but I did kind of like how they beat it over his head to try to, because, you know, Brad Pitt character it doesn't show much emotion. So they did kind of have to like throw emotion into him. And then people just every 4 seconds going like, man, your dad was great, huh? Mm-hmm. Man, your dad, man, I know you're like some guy, but like, oh, your dad, like it's little ham handed, but.
But I do like that actor that played Tanner, because I think the captain. Because he has this very, like, this is your captain speaking manner, but, like, is very friendly, and it's a tragic what happens to him. Because they get a distress signal, and they're going to stop and check it out. And Brad Pitt's like, you absolutely not. But the choice is either we stop the distress signal, or you tell us, if you want to take command of the ship, like, you have to tell us what your goals are. I forget what the reasoning behind that was.
They worded it a little bit more kind of... that made more sense, but it was essentially, if you have to take over the ship, you have to give us a good enough reason, and that reason would be the classified thing. It was so terse enough that you didn't spend time thinking about it, because it probably is pretty stupid.
Yeah, but so they end up checking out the ship, and everyone on board is dead.
Yes.
And then they find the reason that is a, was it a mandrel or
it looks like something. A mandrel, something like that. Yeah,
which don't take them in this place. They're demonic.
Their name is Mandrill.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just asking to get butt fucked.
Yes, that's the problem. What does that mean about the Mandrill sisters?
Oh, well, I mean, he's eaten by a mandrill.
And it attacks Tanner, takes off his face and hands.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
As they're apt to do.
Yeah, they probably should know by now. Yeah, and he sends a message like, yeah, sorry, guys, rest of ship got eaten by monkeys. It happens all the time. But
yeah, Brad Pitt's super cash about it.
They arrive on Mars, and Ruth Negga is there for about 6 seconds until the Mars kind of man bun guy goes, yeah, you're not allowed to be here, so leave. Which just, just give Ruth Negga like 5 more minutes, because it's so weird. It just...
It honestly reminded me of, I've been rewatching The Sopranos, and it reminds me of any time in season 2, There's just so many scenes where AJ enters a scene with someone and they go, AJ, go wait in the car. And then he goes and waits in the car. That's it. Like, it's like we have him under contract. We have to use him. But it was, very like you. So you get introduced to Ruth Negga, but not in this really meaningful way. And then they're like, get out of here. And that dude also played a Martian man bun guy as a Martian on The Expanse.
Oh.
If you've ever watched that show.
Talk about being typecast.
Yeah.
So they bring him to this. Probably the coolest set that's ever existed. This anechoic chamber with a mic sitting in the middle of it.
Yeah. Love the design of this room.
It is so good. They're called anechoic chambers, but there's one in some university in the US. But like the thing with it is it absorbs so much sound that like you can't spend more than a few minutes in it because you start going insane. Because all you can hear is the blood moving through your body, your stomach rumbling, your heartbeat, like all of it that you can normally phase out is ultra magnified. And like there's literal time limits of how long anybody, even if you're of the most sound mind, how long you can spend in there because you start to go fucking batty. And I am much like that kind of call to the void where you're like, you're walking on a bridge and you're kind of like, I kind of want to jump.
Yeah.
I want to go in there because like, I know it won't be good. Yeah. I know it's going to turn out bad, but like, I kind of want to see what it's like.
Yeah. I want to check it out, but I guarantee that as soon as like it starts to settle in or something, we start hearing stuff, that my body is just going to be screams. It's not even just going to be blood. It's just going to be like, what have you done?
Yeah.
Just howls.
Yeah, you can actually like diagnose the cholesterol building up.
Yeah.
But that anechoic chamber is gorgeous. I just, this movie looks great. Oh, and this is where the lighting starts, where in the Mars stations, all of the background lighting is this soft ambient lighting that pulses over the course of scenes. And I don't know if that's an artistic choice or that's, because if you look at wide shots, they don't pulse. Uh-huh. But if you have close-ups, there's kind of pulsing background. It's just...
Well, there's, I mean, and there's that whole interaction he has with Ruth Negga later where it's like the it keeps going from like yellow to white.
That's part of it.
Some of it seems kind of artistic, but yeah, I'm not sure. Which I love also talking about people just kind of showing up. I did enjoy the cameo, the Natasha Lyonne cameo. As
I didn't pick up on that. I saw
person checking you in Mars.
Whatever. Oh, was that Natasha Lyonne?
Yeah, I just love her voice. So it's I don't know, makes me happy.
I saw it in the trivia that she was like ran into the director while they're filming. It's like, oh, I want to be in this. It's like,
yeah,
sure, whatever.
Nice. Yeah, that rules.
Yeah, so they go to the anechoic chamber and he sends a transmission to his dad, and the transmission is very stilted. You know,
it's pre-written by
SpaceCom. From the SpaceCom, I would like to say that I am proud of you, Father. Yeah. Father, and then it doesn't work. He goes to the comfort room, which again, beautiful set design. It's a room with like projected pictures of outside and birds flapping or whatever. But you can see that it's canvas kind of tacked to the wall, and you see like ripples in it where it's not that well done.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of the people that made the set of just like, good, yes.
Yeah. It still feels very organic for being like futuristic or whatever, but it's like, someone still had to build this.
Yeah.
You know, and like with limited resources and
whatever. It's just cheap and shitty like it would be on Mars. It's so good.
And which at this point, Brad Pitt, through, as you find out, through a lot of voiceover and a little bit of his monologuing to his mental health check-ins, after getting saving the dude from getting murdered, well, not saving, but experiencing the dude getting murdered by the monkey, he gives this whole talk about recognizing that rage in his father and also seeing that in himself.
Yeah.
And you're starting to have these little breakdowns with him as he kind of gets further out his whole, and all these experiences, like he's starting to lose his super in controlness. And I'm not sure if it's this point, or no, it's after he gives the...
Yeah, he gives an emotional
speech. Speech where he basically just like, he's like, hey, I remember this about you, whatever. Like something you might say to a dad that you haven't seen in forever.
It was almost identical to what I sent to my dad when he was stuck on Jupiter.
Did he go there to get more stupider?
Yes.
But he, then like, oh, your heart rate's off the charts. You've been infected by dad.
Yes. And I do like this part. At that point, he tries to override the psyche valve. And he's like, I need to send to general blah, 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 blah. Here's my thing. And they're like, no, your authorization code is invalid. It's really revoked. You got slightly sad after talking to your dad. So you're not allowed to be a person anymore.
Your vibes are fucked.
Which, by the way, I like that in the 22nd century that toxic masculinity is still going strong, baby.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like all the emotions I'm not allowed to have and have deep, deep emotional fucking issues because of and mental health problems. Yeah. Oh, that's still going strong.
I love it. That's kind of the core of this movie.
Yeah.
You know, is that being that kind of guy, where that gets you. Neptune.
I mean, you could end up in worse places.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what those would be.
Philadelphia?
Sure. Philadelphia is a fucking cesspool. I don't even get me started on that. Grizzly? What the hell's the name of their fucking awful mascot?
Oh,
Gritty.
Gritty.
Gritty. Yeah.
I want to say Frizzo. That's not even close.
It's very close.
but like that scene again, like that's a great moment that the emotional talk that Brad Pitt has to no one, like his voicemail message to his dad is again, like not going full melodramatic with it, not going Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar.
He's basically stuck on Mars. Ruth Negga approaches him saying, look, I know some inside secrets of what's going on here. What they're going to do is send nukes out to the Lima project. And here's a clip of your dad murdering everybody on the Lima project. And it's a weird reveal. You know, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he needs to know, but that's... Because I feel like your motivation to go is not going to be strengthened when you find out that your dad's a murderer.
Yeah, well, I think, though, like... It just... I think it complicates things more in that, like, so you already have this, like, mixed feelings to your dad. Well, my dad's a hero. He left us, but he was a hero and went and did this stuff. Oh, my God, he's still alive. I can reconnect with him. Oh, he did this thing that seems, because it wasn't just put out like, well, he went nuts and murdered everyone. But, like, you can tell he's kind of losing it a bit. But his whole speech is that, like, the work we're doing is so important. We're almost here. And these people tried to mutiny me. And it's not fully unhinged. So there's some doubt, but yeah, things don't look good for the old Tommy Lee Jones.
He's not looking.
And I'd be curious. I'd be like, hey, Dad, what's up with murdering all these people?
No, fair enough. But what I mean is, I feel
what's
like
what's up with that, Dad?
Dad is at Neptune and things went weird is enough motivation. I feel like the only thing introduced to him being a murderer to me would be like, yeah, maybe I don't want to reconnect. Like that only way that would.
But I mean, ultimately his goal is to stop the surges or whatever. He does, you know, meeting the dad is really, that's icing on the cake. That's dad.
Well, no,
that's dad
it's
icing.
Not though, because they were going to go and stop the surges anyway. And he sneaks onto the rocket just because he wants to go see his dad.
Right.
If he had not intervened, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, the Ark of the Covenant one. If he wasn't there, the ending would have happened anyway and probably would have turned out better.
Well, I mean, they still everything would have blown up.
Well, three astronauts would still be alive.
That's true. They're oopsie murders.
Yeah. That's what they call them in the military.
They're fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he sneaks onto the ship, which is a very tense sequence. Where he's climbing up the ladder outside of the ship and the engine's starting. Like, God damn, this is something.
Very, very artfully done. Because Ruth Negga basically like gives him a pass to some basement passage that goes up into the ship. And I didn't think he made it at first.
What? That would be a great ending of the movie.
Yeah. It's like, whoops. Well, anyway, we're going to go blow up your day.
But
he gets on there and like immediately announces himself like, hey guys, I'm on the ship. Ship's already taken off. He's like, I'm on the ship. Don't start no shit. Won't be no shit. I think was the actual line of dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, you're within a word. Yeah. I'm not going to, you know, this isn't Shakespearean sonnets. It doesn't need to be perfect.
But they're like, how dare you go get him, crew. And they like go to subdue him. But then through speeding up, how does the gravity kick on?
So, yeah. All right. So two of the crew unbelts themselves without proper spacesuits on. The engines kick on, which would send everybody shoved back against their seats were they in seats.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, one of them was facing forward, so her face was shoved against a door and it explodes her face. The other one, kind of the same thing. And then the third was still in the seat safely.
Yeah.
And then they have a fight and a fire extinguisher gets loose and whatever the nasty thing in there suffocates the two remaining astronauts, which it seems like a really dumb kind of fire extinguisher to have.
Yeah, well,
because that would be like a life extinguisher.
Well, I think the idea though is that you would
be fire of life.
You would be better prepared to use it.
Yeah, but I mean the point. I mean, even if you have like oxygen, which they show, he tries to make the captain breathe the pure O2 after the fire extinguisher got loose. You would think. Even if that's an option, you would still design a fire extinguisher that didn't kill everybody in the room immediately.
Well, it's also not supposed to be used in fights, I think was the other.
Well, I mean, the point is it went off and suffocated them. That's some fucking bad design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Unless that was part of the plan, too. We don't know what SpaceCom's plans are.
Yeah. Plans and you know what I think plans. Planned it? That fucking mandrel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this leads into a whole section of him on his way to Neptune. And it's him by himself. Kind of going a little nuts.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a good sequence.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of at the end of William Friedkin's Sorcerer when Roy Scheider just has this kind of mental breakdown. It's just like these interspersed things of him just kind of thinking about his life and how much he's fucked up. And I think like that's where the voiceover kind of worked pretty well because it kind of smoothed off the rough edges of him just going like, oh, fuck, selfish, so selfish.
Yeah, and this you get like nice flashbacks to like his marriage dissolving, what went on with his dad. Like it's a somewhat elegant way to get some of the backstory that you still need to finish off.
Yeah,
I think there's a bit of a problem with the film, and this kind of the highlight of it is the overused trope of, you know, you're saying the angelic girlfriend that you're like too distant for and then having father issues. We're just like, this whole sequence is just like, hey, look, tropes are happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of, it makes sense that like, you know, his dad was closed off and unemotional. So he does that to himself and it's ruining his own life. And there's so much, cause there's a part where he even says out loud, like in narration, this is one of the ones that bug me where it's like, you know, like the son has to deal with the sins of the father, pretty much, I mean, is what he says. And it's like, yeah, that's the whole movie, man. I get it.
Yeah.
But like, there's so much of that. And they hit it over, they bash over the head with it, that it can feel like a little bit much.
Correct. But they get there, and thankfully that sequence looks beautiful and it's great, so we can kind of look past a little bit of the tropiness. And he finally arrives, and he sees that the Lima Project has, its orbit is disintegrated, so he has to, like, pilot his little jumper thing to try to get to it, which sort of plays out later in a very confusing sequence. But anyway, he gets on the ship, and there's just dead bodies floating in place. One's got, like, a bag on his head. I was like, oh, no, that might be Jason from part two, but it's not. It's, it's just a floating dead guy.
I have the same thought.
Because Jason X, he's in space later, so I'm like, oh, are they just combining the two films as a reboot?
Oh, you can't, because bag on your head in space is you're dead.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no way.
I found that out now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a scientist. I mean, I'm like 30 credits away to being one, but like,
I've seen some YouTube videos.
Yeah, yeah. So
I know about the coronavirus and I know about space.
Exactly. I've read a lot of headlines on Facebook, so I'm pretty sure I know what's going on. So, there's some dead bodies. There is public domain black and white movies playing.
Yes, love those.
That's a way to give people character without having to pay money. So they go, and here's the main thing I take away from this film. He finally sees his father in the Lima Project. And motherfucker, does Tommy Lee Jones look good with a beard?
Yes, he does.
Oh, boy, does he. It annoys me that his younger years, he didn't have a beard. So I can go, God damn, that guy looks good with a beard. Yeah,
although, you know, it might be one that it fits his older face better. You know, as his features get a little bigger.
Because there's a part where he's in the spacesuit and he's kind of, he's at like 3/4 angle. Mm-hmm. He looks like that recreation of a Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm.
You know that one like kind of like the friendly Neanderthal that was on Natural Geographic? Because he's got that big nose and he's got the face.
A little bit of a
forehead. Like, oh, shit. Yeah. But boy, yeah, it looks great with a beard.
Yeah. And they have a nice piece. So Tommy Lee Jones has been out there this entire time trying to contact.
Oh yeah, we haven't even talked about the whole fucking point of the Lima Project.
Yeah, because I mean, you don't know for a lot of it, but basically you find out that they're just trying to get as far away from everything as possible, so their satellites or their gizmos and whatever aren't screwed up by solar radiation or something. But just like so they can get a clear view of what's really out there, and he was really hoping to make connections with another
alien
life form.
Yeah,
and that has not happened.
Yes.
And so he gives this whole speech about that, but how like he's still going to keep trying and we're so close.
And essentially, he went so insane from not finding alien life that like when the other people on the mission were like, dude, we have to go home. Mm-hmm. He essentially murdered them.
Yeah.
You see like scenes of him having written, is there life on other planets on the front of a National Geographic? Him writing like, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Degrading handwriting. Like he's obviously, he has suffered mental stresses.
Yeah. But then you have the tragic irony of him foregoing all human connections in an effort to seek a connection that's just not even there.
There's a nice little bit of business visually for that where Brad Pitt's reaching out to him to try to pull him forward, to try to get him back in his spacesuit or whatever. And Tommy Lee shirks back, which we saw a scene earlier of Liv Tyler trying to kiss Brad Pitt in a flashback and him shirking his head away. And it's just like this, sins of the father being passed down. And it's like this really visual, nice thing of like, he's trying to so desperately for connection. He can't even hold his fucking son's hand.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I didn't resonate with at all. And I don't have father issues.
Well, that was, that's actually, again, at the beginning in voiceover, he talked about that, like how he's like, everyone thinks I'm cool, but I'm always just looking for an exit.
Yeah.
And don't touch me. And I was like, well, hello, movie.
Yes.
It's me. I'm Brad Pitt. He ends up telling Brad Pitt, like, I never cared about you. You and your mother just never even entered my mind about any of this. I just don't care.
Yeah. It's pretty brutal. Yeah.
But like, again, how Brad Pitt handles that line is amazing. Like it's all just on the face and he's like, yeah, I know, but it's really great.
Yeah.
And I like though, I do like that for a movie that really kind of hits you over the head with the themes of you know, the father son stuff. And then, you know, extrapolating out from that, like a distant and negligent God, even that kind of thing, that through line of just why you do this stuff in the first place. Like, why are you going out to space? What is, you know, you're trying to forge these connections and do these things. What motivates someone to go do this stuff? Not just what's out there, but why do we go seek this stuff? And I thought that was very interesting because I was kind of worried that it was going to be, there were actually going to be aliens, and I'm really glad.
Oh, that would have really bothered the shit out of me.
Yeah.
There was a moment,
unless he was like partying on the ship with Mac and me, that would have been like pretty sweet.
I mean, yes. If Mac and me showed up, I would have no problem with that. Especially if that kid with the wheelchair just floats by the window.
Right. Yeah.
Damn you. So anyway, they escape the ship and, Tommy Lee Jones has this kind of, basically just decides to kill himself in the dumbest way possible.
Yeah.
Shoots his little backpack jet rockets or whatever towards the rings of Neptune, pulling Brad Pitt with him. And it's a cool bit of like kind of physics and it looks neat. And Brad Pitt has to let him go. Essentially just like, yeah. I have to let this man, he's gone and untethered. And Brad Pitt has a beautiful, just screaming moment that they shoot from outside. And it's not like the, you know, in space, no one can hear you scream thing, but like, it's so muted that it's almost like you're hearing it through the helmet. And it's a really nice bit of like cinema. Like, boy, it looks good.
They really do a great job with so much of this, of the vastness of space as experienced by this man and reflected through this man. Like, you're there with him. You're in the helmet with him, basically, or, you know, nearby or whatever. But that whole thing, like, it boils down to wrestling with your dad in space. Which is like, that's this whole movie right there.
Yeah, totally.
And then, because Brad Pitt has set the nuke. They're like, well, we got to blow up the station because this will stop the whatever weird things you're doing. Because even then, it sounded like the pulses happened because the crew, like, sabotaged some
stuff. Yeah, it was the antimatter, like, drive or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's that went wonky because the people wanted to go home. Yeah.
So Brad Pitt sets the thing to blow up with a ticking clock. And then this whole space thing happens. And Brad Pitt's a little bit like, well, shit.
Well, yeah, he's got this kind of monologue of like, what should I go on? What's the point of returning? You know, I just murdered three people to get here. Mm-hmm. And he sees this flashing object in the detritus ring around Neptune. And I just went, oh God, don't be aliens. Don't be fucking aliens. And thankfully it wasn't. He was seeing his ship that he came in that he had to park over there because he needed to fly. And I'm like, oh, thank God it's not aliens. But this is, as nice as this movie is and as beautiful as this movie is, a very dumb scene happens.
It is kind of dumb, but I also kind of liked it. But like, while acknowledging, like, because again, this is where it feels like genre-y. This feels where it's like, oh, it's a Carpenter movie or
Kind
of thing. And I'm just throwing, and it's not specifically John Carpenter, but I'm just, that was the first genre name that came to mind. But so he's,
because you're into woodworking. That's established earlier.
Because he's very sad about his dad dying, but he's got a, and like, he can't, his ship got jacked up when he tried to dock with the place to begin with, his little escape pod. So I think the initial plan was him and Tommy Lee Jones, like, jetting to, I think that's why they were tethered. They were going to like take turns using their jets to kind of propel the other one.
Yeah. Or something like that.
Yeah. To his ship. But what Brad Pitt does is he takes off, there's this like spinning antenna thing. He takes this sheet of metal off of it and then uses like both. Or no, that's the explosions later, but like uses his jets to give him propelling a little bit, but he's got to go through the rings of Neptune, which are all just rocks. And so they're fighting against the shield and they cut it short, smartly so. But it is like a counterpoint to the whole like falling with rocks to rising through the rocks.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But if you spend a second to think about it, like one, the physics don't work because, okay, you'd be torn to shreds. So just ignoring that, those rockets, any impact on the shield would give force backwards. Mm. So he would not have the momentum to keep going forward. What? He would eventually be forced to be shoved backwards.
No, but he shoves the shield forward at the last minute. So that's
Of course. Yeah. My mistake. Yeah. I forgot. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction except in dramatic moments.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just, I wrote this feels anti-physics, but I just want to just wipe my head. That's fine.
I mean, like I said, there's so much this movie that's like, you know, but that was actually, but
that was, I mean, I've suspended a lot of disbelief, but that was like, that's a lot.
I'm dumb enough that I went, hell yeah, this rules.
I mean, it was awesome. I'm not taking away from how awesome it was, but
I was so happy. I fired a couple of six guns into the ground, lifting myself up in the air.
Well, that actually works. I just
told you.
So he sends a message back saying like, hey, look, this is Captain Roy. I'm about to fly back. Here's my idea. I'm going to use the nuclear explosion as a propeller to shoot back towards Earth, which is sound physics. They actually experimented with it, or at least had the idea of having nuclear rockets, of essentially just dropping a fucking bomb out the back and then just putting a big ass shield there and just it shoving you forward. Like,
so now shields work. Checkmate.
No, not the one he's holding, and also not that it was just as wide as his body.
Yeah.
That's the main problem. If he had a 30-foot shield or a 20-foot shield, a 10-foot shield,
too heavy. Too heavy.
Oh, I forgot how gravity works.
Yeah.
But anyway,
no, it's his point stats as astronaut. He's not strength based. he put too much into Dex.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, he's just rolling nat 20s. That's what he does. Yeah, that's what he was rolling in that one point. That was him rolling nat 20. So he starts flying back towards Earth. And I don't think anything happens until he gets back,
right? He basically just, because they kind of fast forward to landing, essentially. But he does, he's got to escape the blast of the shuttle, which of course is one big final metaphor for escaping the damage that his father has done to the world and also to him.
Oh, metaphors. Yeah. Ah. Yeah. Should have thought about those.
Yep. Yeah, there are a couple in there.
They should have been more obvious about it, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of like the subtlety of saying it out loud to your face about what's going on.
Oh, you know what? I forgot about that. All those parts where they explained it directly. That was my mistake.
And then he gets found, and he basically repeats the speech he gives at the beginning when his check-in thing about, like, I'm, you know, only paying attention to the essentials and all this stuff.
Yeah, I'm living in the moment.
But it reads different because he's trying to reconnect with people, and it ends with him at a cafe, sipping coffee, and then Liv Tyler shows up.
Which I do like. As cheeseball as it is, I like that. I like that they don't show them embracing. They show her walking through the door. That's it. And I feel like that's an adult way to approach something.
Yeah, it's a little pat, like it's a little neat, but I agree that I do like that it's not like them hugging and it ends. Like I'm willing to give this a shot. Like I know, like, man, I learned a lot about myself on this trip, and
that coffee date could end with, oh yeah, I'm already remarried. Yeah, exactly. You know, like that's
it's more about him willing to do that, and so I like that wasn't. The end game wasn't hooray, Liv Tyler, he got the girl after all. It was that, like, no, I'm learning how to be a human being.
Somewhat.
I'm no longer my job.
What you're missing, though, is that so in the pitch meeting for the sequel Ad Astra's, somebody walks up to a whiteboard on that second S, just draws a buddy side.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
On this, okay, no, there's
Ad Astra's.
I thought you were like Ad Astra's.
No, Ad Astra's. Yeah. Because that's a thing that happens.
Yeah, and that's when the aliens show up.
Yes. All right, so Ad Astra, I'm going to go first. John, I was going to say I couldn't recommend this movie enough. That's wrong. If you're a sci-fi person at all, boy, this you should be annoyed you missed this. Mm-hmm. If you have a really big 4K TV with, like, a good sound system, oh boy, watch. Like, beautiful, beautiful film. Yeah. Very much recommended.
Same, yeah. I will add the caveat that if you're a particular kind of sci-fi person, if you're not looking for a big space opera thing, although this has elements of it, if you're more in the line of like the 2001 Solaris kind of thing.
I meant Asimov absolutely. Sci-fi, not George Lucas sci-fi.
Right. Yeah. But I really enjoyed this. I would like to watch it again. I would love to watch it on the big screen. Bummed that I missed it. It's a little ponderous. It's a little melodramatic in places, but I think overall it's worth it. Go check it out.
Yeah. Yes. So, John,
mm-hmm.
as we do every week when the times we remember, we recommend something that we're watching to the audience. And I would like you to go first as I try to think of what I'm going to recommend.
A couple of things, as I referenced at least one of these in the episodes, but I was kind of spurred by this to watch more of these kind of movies. And so I did revisit Tarkovsky's Solaris and Claire Denis's High Life, which is available on Amazon with Robert Pattinson.
Tarkovsky's Solaris, that's the original Russian one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yes, I did see that. Yeah, that's the one with the 15-minute car driving up the driveway scene.
Yes. It's not a driveway, but yeah.
You know the part I'm talking about.
Yeah. That bit aside, I do very much like that movie. I've never seen the Soderbergh Clooney one, which I've heard is actually pretty
good. It's actually pretty good, yeah.
But I'm a huge fan of that one, and it's not for all tastes, but that, and then also, there's been a lot of talk lately about this Ted Lasso fella.
He catches small cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't have Apple TV, so I'm not watching it. But a kind of feel good show I've been watching lately is Joe Pera Talks to You, which was on Adult Swim and with comedian Joe Pera. And I think it's very funny. It's very kind of earnest without being like,
you know what I mean, Vern? Yeah.
But without being like that kind of like cynical, like trying to make you cry or anything like that. But it's weird and kind of fun, and I enjoy it. It's a nice like. End of the day, right before bed, I'll watch that show because it's very soft. But
The Ted Lasso everybody talks about, and now it's to the point that too many people are talking about it, so I'm never going to watch it.
Yep.
All right. So here I have two recommendations. One is a quick one, podcast, which I don't think we've recommended a podcast in this show.
Why would we? There's only one.
This American Life.
Yep.
Okay.
Serial.
The first podcast. There was a podcast 8 years ago or so called Mates. Now this is the, John, I think you're going to understand this because I don't think you even know where the name of our show came from. Mates is Mike and Tom Eat Snacks.
Oh,
which I very much just went, oh, that's a cool title. John and Alex Hate Stuff. It's not that it's stolen, but obviously right. The construction is there. I didn't realize I did that until like 2 years into the show. I went, oh yeah. So anyway, they stopped doing episodes 5 years ago. And all these numbers are wrong.
Yeah.
But they've had, I think 2016 was the last episode. Without, just out of nowhere, they just put out two new episodes. Like apparently they're doing it again.
Oh, that's fun.
And I haven't listened to the new ones, but I have gone back and started listening to the old ones again because I haven't listened in, you know, 5 years or whatever. And it is hilarious. It's Michael Ian Black from The State and mm-hmm. Stella and everywhere else. And Tom Cavanaugh, who from Ed.
Yes.
He was on the Flash TV show, which is, I believe, why the show Mike and Tom didn't do it, because I think that records in probably Vancouver. Mm. It's a hilarious show. They eat a snack every day, each episode, and rate it. And they take it way too seriously, and it's super fun. So,
are the episodes like fairly short, or is it an hour? Hour talking about
anywhere between half an hour. I don't think they ever go a full hour.
Okay,
it's usually about a half hour. But it's real funny. They're very quick, and a lot of the episode has nothing to do with the snack. It's just dumb. Yeah. So that and a show I'm going to recommend in a very specific sense: Manifest, the NBC show,
mm-hmm.
which is. Very Lindelof, J.J. Abrams, puzzle box kind of thing. It is melodramatic as all fuck. It is surface level written when it comes to emotions. A lot of it is, but my family's more important. The mm-hmm. amount of times that someone declares how important their family is, it's Fast and the Furious level.
Uh-huh.
But it is a very watchable show. Like, they actually do a good job sticking to the mystery. Like it seems like they actually know why the thing's happening. Like it's not like a Lost thing where they just kind of keep moving the goalposts. Like it seems like they actually know what's up. And, but season three just went on Netflix and it is, if you're of the mind of I am, that you can deal with that kind of puzzle boxy, mm-hmm. it is very satisfying.
Yeah, it can be fun.
Yeah. It's not like, I want to be very clear. This is me going, oh, this is like a find and it's brilliant and great. And no, it's not. It's just, it is a satisfying, it's snack food. John and Alex Eat Snacks. So yes, that is my recommendation. Manifest. So John, next week, we need to figure out what movie we're watching. I'm going to leave that up to you. And just a small aside, you better pronounce every fucking word of this correctly. If there's like, let's say by happenstance, there happens to be like a proper name in there, chew the goddamn syllable. So John, what are we watching next week?
Absolutely. We're going to watch Psycho Gorman, which was suggested on our Facebook page from Patrick Zaroon. I don't know how to say your name, Patrick. Sorry, but
let's hope it's not Zaroony because that sounds a little, you know, Italian.
I'm going 01 and pretending he's Neo from The Matrix.
Perfect.
But thank you for the suggestion. Yes, we're going to watch Psycho Gorman, a bizarre movie from 2020, I believe, or was it 2019? I thought you had the information right in front of you.
No, I closed it.
You're making me look like an asshole.
No, you did that yourself.
God,
mispronouncing that guy's last name like that.
Anyway, it's a very bizarre little horror comedy. You should check it out.
Yes.
Or listen to us talk about it and then check it out.
Or do it in the other order. Don't let John tell you how to live. So we'll do that. Psycho Gorman for next week or next episode. You can find us on Twitter at JawsPod, on Facebook, John Alex Say Stuff, or there is a Patreon where we occasionally post shit. Alex Bolen, AlexBolen, is the Patreon. That's it. Yep. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.